This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Wednesday, January 9th. I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, alternative methods of healing. Some people say we could learn a lot from the old ways. We'll also have a look at your AM 580 weather forecast for Champaign-Urbana, but first, a look at today's news. Herb Whitlock was set free Tuesday. He served 20 years of a life sentence for a murder that many say he didn't commit. Edgar County Judge James Glenn's decision came after prosecutors decided not to retry him after in appeals court throughout his murder conviction. Whitlock was convicted in the stabbing death of Karen Rhodes, who died along with her husband Dyke in their Paris, Illinois home in July of 1986. Co-defendant Randy Steidel was released in 2004 under similar circumstances. Former State Police Lieutenant Michael Callahan may have played a role in Whitlock's freedom. He successfully sued his superiors for reassigning him after trying to reinvestigate the Rhodes deaths.
I think the example here is it shows you what a government's capable of doing if it's allowed to go unchecked, which means put innocent men in prison, try to execute them, and then even cover it up. And I think that should be an example to everybody that this could happen to anyone in this country.
Despite being set free, the state still considers Whitlock a suspect in the Rhodes murders. Judge Glenn had set a date for a new trial for later this month. Michael Vujovic of the Appellate Prosecutor's Office says the state simply couldn't meet the time constraints.
So the better course of action, at least in our judgment, was to nolly the case at this juncture, continue on with our investigation, and depending on how that comes out on down the road, decide what then and there whether or not to reinitiate the prosecution against Mr. Whitlock.
Whitlock attorney Richard Kling refutes Vujovic's comments, saying there's no evidence that would allow this to remain an open case. Kling says it took 22 years for the state to do the right thing. Whitlock now plans to spend some time with his family. A top official with the Futuregen Alliance says the low-pollution power plant will be built, but the schedule might be moved back over time. AM 580's Tom Rogers has more.
About 30 engineers and other officials visited Mattoon for the first time since the city won a national competition for the $1.8 billion coal-to-energy plant. Senior Vice President Jerry Oliver says Futuregen officials want to start work the day after tomorrow, but that's not possible.
We've already got the contractor picked. We're ready to go. We've got a contractor picked for permitting. I mean, we've taken in good faith and moved the project forward as we should. But, you know, you kind of reach barriers we can't stop.
That big barrier is the U.S. Department of Energy, which is footing three-quarters of Futuregen's bill. It has yet to release a so-called record of decision. That's necessary for work to start. Angela Griffin, whose Coals Together organization helped win Futuregen for Mattoon, says they're equally anxious.
The Alliance and the community and the state have done everything that we can to move this project forward. It's up to DOE to issue the record of decision, and you know we have no concerns that we can't address.
Oliver says he can't address concerns from DOE officials that the projected cost of Futuregen rose steeply between 2004 and when the site selection process began. He says delays may mean moving the 2012 target date for the first electricity from the plant. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
A Paxton man was killed Tuesday morning when his vehicle became submerged on a flooded country road in rural Ford County. 24-year-old Bradley Swan's vehicle became submerged on a county road southwest of Paxton, which was flooded by a nearby drainage ditch. Ford County Coroner Doug Wallace says when a Paxton Fire Department rescue unit arrived, Swan's vehicle was completely submerged, and emergency personnel had to use a boat to get to him. Swan was pronounced dead a short while later at Gibson Area Hospital in Gibson City. An autopsy was planned for this morning. Meanwhile, Pontiac police rescued a woman from the Vermilion River yesterday afternoon. The woman was dragged about a quarter mile by the current after she fell in. The Bloomington Pantograph reports she was transported to a hospital in Pontiac. The flooding that caused the death and injury is related to the heavy rainfall and runoff from melting snow that has caused the National Weather Service to issue flood warnings in most of east central Illinois and northwest Indiana. At least three people have drowned due to flooding in northern Indiana. Meanwhile, a section of southbound Interstate 65 that was closed due to flooding in Jasper County, Indiana, has reopened, but other roads in northern Indiana remain closed due to high water. Champaign City Council last night endorsed their city manager's decision to file for intervention and Ameren's request to state regulators for higher electricity delivery rates. And council members have decided they'd like to make such interventions a regular practice. AM 580's Jim Meadows has more.
Ameren's proposal could raise delivery charges for electricity to Champaign City street lamps by up to 45%. Intervention allows the city to argue its views on the proposal before the Illinois Commerce Commission and view documents filed by Ameren in the case. Champaign is making a similar intervention in Illinois American Water's proposed rate increase. And Councilman Tom Bruno says he'd like to see the city intervene in all proposed utility rate increases that affect Champaign.
I can't imagine a rate case in which I wouldn't want the city of Champaign to have its voice heard in the process. I think it ought to be city policy that we intervene 100% of the time and be heard on the issue of what these rates should be.
Other council members agreed, and City Manager Steve Carter will be back before the council in a few weeks with a draft of such a policy. Champaign council members narrowly rejected Carter's original proposal that he be allowed to initiate such interventions on his own, but he says the policy will provide him with much of the flexibility on rate hike interventions that he was seeking. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
The dispute over Indiana's voter identification law is headed to the U.S. Supreme Court today. It's as much a partisan political drama as a legal tussle. The mainly Republican backers of the law, including the Bush administration, say state-produced photo identification is a prudent measure to cut down on vote fraud, even though Indiana has never had a prosecution of the kind of fraud the law is supposed to prevent. The opponents, mainly Democrats, view voter ID a modern-day poll tax that disproportionately affect poor, minority, and elderly voters who tend to back Democrats. The decision could come by late June. Elections officials across Illinois saw a surge in voter registrations as the deadline to sign up for the Illinois primary approached. Official registration numbers won't be available until next week, but several counties reported Tuesday that they were seeing a jump from past years. Tuesday was the last day to register for the February 5th election. Chicago elections officials have seen about 10,000 people register in the last 6 days, roughly triple the number from past presidential primaries. Peoria County Chief Deputy Clerk Lynn Schmidt attributes the increase partly to excitement over the presidential race. For the latest newscast online, go to wil.illinois.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Bosser. When most of us get sick, we go to the doctor and get medicine. But some people are holding on to the old ways of healing, and many people think we could learn a lot from the old ways. Kyle Norris has this story.
The small store is called Nature's Products. It's in a neighborhood with a lot of abandoned buildings and storefront churches. When you walk inside the store, the smell of incense clings to your clothes. Green plants hang in the windows, and there are jars and jars of bulk herbs lining the shelves. Gary Wantage opened the store 30 years ago. He's always been interested in natural healing techniques and herbal medicine. Now that all might sound New Agey, but this place is not New Agey at all. The reason Wantage opened the store in his hometown of Detroit was because he wanted to help the people who lived there.
In a lot of urban areas, people are very limited on resources. They're limited with money, they're limited with shopping resources, and this was one way that I tried to give back to the community.
Wantage says that one of the main reasons he stayed in Detroit is because of his customers. They're some of his biggest teachers. Many of his customers are older African Americans. They came from the South to work in the factories during World War II. When they came, they brought with them a cultural knowledge of herbs and natural healing techniques. One of his customers is 72-year-old Faith. That's her legal name, just Faith. She grew up in a segregated farming community in Louisiana. Her father was a farmer, and he taught her all about herbs.
I am the youngest child of all, so I'm the baby. And I often would, he would often let me ride on his shoulder. And sometime, you know, I'd be saying, Papa, what is this? And he would tell me what that was. He would tell me, we'd be walking through the fields, and he would tell me what that was, and he would tell me different things, what you use this for, what you use that for. I had 100 questions. Boy, I was a kid, I had 100 questions.
She says back then, everyone knew about the herbs, and everyone used them. At that time, people who were poor or black or who lived in rural areas did not often have the option of going to a doctor, and so they turned to the plants and trees around them for medicine. And they developed a great knowledge about what did and didn't work to keep people healthy.
The pine tree was used for many things because it's one of the things where you get turpentine from. It was definitely used for healing. And we use turpentine for sores anytime. And it works today. If you get a cut and you put turpentine on it immediately, as soon after you hit it, it will never be sore.
Herbs were actually our first form of medicine. That's what Susanna Zick says. She's a naturopathic physician who teaches at the University of Michigan. She says we have a collective knowledge about herbs that's thousands of years old. She says when you compare that to what modern-day science knows about herbs, it's not much of a comparison.
In a sense, we have just a tiny little window that science shows us as compared to the long use.
Zick says we could learn a lot from these folks and the knowledge they have. But not many researchers are studying people like the customers here in Detroit.
I think that we can actually learn what herbs they're using a lot of and what for, because I think those are probably the ones that would be of most interest. In particular, it's a good question, too, if they're using them with conventional medications. It's for safety issues. But also, if this is their primary health care for some of them, if it's working, then this is a very inexpensive way of providing health care for people who might otherwise get none.
Everyone we heard from in this story said the same thing. For us to have good health, the old-school ways of healing can work hand-in-hand with modern-day doctors and science. But the people who know about herbs are growing older, and they're dying. And their knowledge is dying with them. For the Environment Report, I'm Kyle Morris.
In the forecast for East Central Illinois, mostly sunny skies. We've cooled off a bit, but still not a great deal. The high around 47 today. Increasing clouds tonight with a low of 32 degrees. Mostly cloudy tomorrow. Some showers possible, primarily during the afternoon. The high 45. Cloudy skies tomorrow night. Periods of light snow possible. The low 28. Mostly cloudy with some flurries Friday. The high 35. And for Friday night, mostly cloudy skies. The low 25. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Wednesday, January 9th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, will.illinois.edu. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.